Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing all right, Robert. How are you?
Oh, you know, everything has changed since the last time we recorded. We are practicing social distancing, and we are recording from our respective homes, which is why things may sound a little different, but we are going to be talking about the only story around, which is COVID-19, the coronavirus and the response from the government, and of course also the legislature, which has kept going in face of everything else. So
yeah, I know it would be like really nice if we had a podcast to get people's minds off of it, but unfortunately this is what's going on in the government, and we talk about the government on this podcast, so we have to do it.
I guess that's just kind of how it goes. Right. All right, without any further ado, let's get to the news. I guess maybe before we get started, though, Jasmine, let's just check in. Like, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. So my office this week finally sent out an email Monday morning that we were going to go basically on half staff because, I mean, even though the courts are largely closed down, public defenders still have to work. Like, for me, as an appellate attorney, I still have appellate deadlines, and in-custody cases still need to be heard. So we are all still working, but we're on half staff. So I am working remotely this week, and then I go back to work next week and kind of switch on and off.
Yeah, but that's kind of weird. I mean, and I guess the courts are just things that can't really stop because things continue to happen, and, you know, life does kind of go on. People continue to live lives, so got to have functioning stuff. Yeah. The data analysts world, I'm working from home, and I think everybody else in my office is. It's kind of been a big adjustment, but I don't know. I feel pretty safe here. It's kind of stressful. My wife works a job where she's going in on a regular basis and has to be around people a lot. So, you know.
Yeah, and so does my fiance. So,
you know,
it's scary.
It is. It's very scary out there. But yeah, everybody who's listening, stay safe. Our partners need to stay safe as well. But let's talk a little bit about the government and its reaction to this crisis that we have found ourselves inside of. So we talked a little bit last week, me and EA, we talked a little bit about Governor Beshear's response and his daily press conferences that were ongoing even then. They have continued. So I think for most of last week, there were twice daily press conferences, and he's kind of cut that back to one a day. I think in most of them, he's called for very measured actions. He's asked Kentuckians to remain calm but vigilant. And he's actually announced an escalating series of actions that the government would take to ensure the safety of Kentuckians. And yeah, those have grown in their severity over time.
And they've grown quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. They have grown quickly. And so the number of cases, by this evening, by Wednesday evening, the number of cases of COVID-19 had risen to 34. I think when we recorded last week, that number was at like 4, maybe like 2. So, you know, 7. I don't know, these numbers are out of date. So there's several in Louisville and Lexington, several in Harrison County. There's, I think, as of today, one in Kenton County, one in Warren County. There's one in Lyon County. There's several.
One in Franklin.
Yeah.
That was the most recent one to come in.
Okay. Well, they're now, at least it's mattering from all over the state. We don't really have too many reports about their severity, their need of the ICU, which is, of course, something that has been in the national news. But this is something we're tracking very closely, I guess, as best we can, given the number of tests that the state has. So just to go over some of the actions that the governor has taken, I mean, the first really, really big one that I think really had an impact on everybody was closing bars and restaurants except for carryout and delivery. So that was, you know, huge. The closing the schools for at least 2 weeks, that was equally huge, if not larger. And I think it's likely that we'll see more than a 2 week closure.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's going back.
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody going back until next fall, but that's just a guess. But, you know, based on what we can see, all government services have been closed to in-person services. Child care centers are going to be closed, closing hair salons, spas, gyms, and movie theaters. Those are all like the major things that are now closed. I mean, and basically the governor has said in most of his press conferences, just like don't create a crowd. I actually think also charity gaming parlors, like bingo parlors, were closed today.
He called out like a bingo hall in Pike County or something that had been staying open.
Yeah. But yeah, basically anything that could possibly draw a crowd has been closed. More of the major things that have happened: we are moving the primary election. You know, we were looking forward to it being in mid-May. It is now going to be June 23rd, and we have waived the waiting period to file for unemployment insurance. So, I mean, that's just some of the larger things that have happened. Obviously, some of these are massive, unprecedented things that have never happened before, and the government, as far as we can tell. I will say, I think the steps taken by Kentucky are some of the most aggressive in the nation. You know, I think some of our border states, Ohio, has also taken very aggressive steps. But
I think we've kind of been like following Ohio, like a couple of days after they've done something, then we've implemented it here.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is something. Ohio moved their primary yesterday, and that was quite controversial. The day of the primary, I think they tried to move it. Yeah, so that was a little bit of a odd situation for sure. A lot of the places where the virus has gotten quite bad, so think like Washington, California, New York, they have ended up adopting these steps, but they adopted them kind of later in the process, and that's like after the number of cases rose very substantially. I think New York has, you know, 1,500 or so cases, and they have yet to close schools. I think they have a plan to close schools, but they have not yet done it. California has gone so far, you know, they escalated their steps quite substantially, and they already jumped to adopting a shelter-in-place order for several counties around San Francisco, and I think New York City is also considering that. I kind of think that by adopting aggressive measures early, Kentucky may avoid having a large number of cases, or at least, you know, that's the big hope. We've seen all these like graphs of how many cases are in the United States and how they're rising over time. One of the things that I would tell people to think about is like where these cases are clustered. And thinking of the United States of America as a single country makes sense because we are one single country. But, you know, when you think of Italy, that's part of Europe. And, you know, that most of their cases are kind of clustered in one area, and they're trying to prevent the spread. And when you're thinking about Kentucky, you know, we're adopting these pretty aggressive measures, and it is here, but there's 34 cases that we've been able to test for. And by adopting these very stringent measures, hopefully they won't grow to the point where our health system will be overtaxed. So I think that's the big hope. Jasmine, what have you thought about these? I mean, there's obviously been a lot of, you know, people saying this is too far. Some people who have called for even greater action. Like, what is your take on it?
I mean, unfortunately, I think it's probably the right thing to do. And like, it sucks because some of these people, especially like the restaurant industry, you know, they depend on money from tips and things like that. And, you know, just going down to carry out, they're probably laying off some workers, cutting hours, or maybe closing completely. And I also think about like with hair salons and spas, a lot of those employees are independent contractors who aren't paying into unemployment, and so they're not eligible for it. So, I mean, it is going to be devastating to a lot of people, but when you look at all the flattening the curve graphs and everything, I do feel like it's the right thing to do. I'd rather be here in Kentucky, like taking these measures, than having, you know, Jim Justice as our governor telling people to go eat at Bob Evans.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, Jim Justice, the governor of West Virginia, who, yes, a couple of days ago told people to go eat at Bob Evans, and they think they did, and the places were mostly packed. So, you know, that was stupid. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, these are unprecedented measures. It's scary. I mean, there's no other word for it. It's scary out there right now. Uncertainty about both everyone's health in general, but then also what does it mean when, you know, what is getting back to normal even look like? How is the world going to be different? And you know, this is one of those things that it does seem like everything's going to be different afterwards. We will be talking about this for the rest of our lives. And I don't know. And I don't think there is any way to know. So I think that Governor Beshear is taking the actions necessary, but, you know, it is still quite terrifying to think about what might happen in the future. So that's kind of where we're at with the actions taken. We're going to talk a little bit about impacts now. I'm going to talk a little bit about the impact on the primary election. So the primary election has been postponed until June 23rd. Secretary of State Michael Adams made the formal request to Governor Beshear for this to occur, and he agreed that's the procedure that needs to take place in the event of an emergency for that to occur, and that's how it went. June 23rd is the latest that the primary could be moved under current law. It says, you know, 35 days is the latest you can move it, and that's 35 days or after the date of the primary that was scheduled under normal circumstances.
So can it be delayed an additional 35? Like, can it keep being delayed 35 days if it calls for that?
I'm not totally sure. I would be surprised if they moved it past that. I think this kind of gives everybody a sense of, you know, figuring out how it might happen. I think the most likely thing to occur is that we may allow for people to vote absentee without any excuses. I think, you know, I would prefer like a vote by mail type system. The states that voted recently on Tuesday, I think mostly did vote by mail. And I think in places like Arizona, I think the number of voters actually increased from 2016 because of all the voting by mail that occurred. I think that we may be allowed for like no excuse absentee, which is a little different than vote by mail. But I would be surprised if it moved past June 23rd. Of course, the presidential, the Democratic National Convention is in, you know, July. Kentucky now at June 23rd is the last state in the country to go on the current date. I mean, of course, all these election dates are up in the air, so somebody else might move after us. And of course, the Democratic nomination is mostly wrapped up. I think that, you know, Joe Biden mostly has it wrapped up. I think it's a lot of the people that are looking in the math say that, you know, Bernie Sanders cannot come back. I don't want to get too deep into that right now, but it does seem like that mostly is wrapped up. But I do think, you know, we would want to have our primary election before the convention, which would be in July. So I don't think it would be possible to move it much past that. And, you know, if we aren't, mm-hmm. depending on where we are on June 23rd, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what what they do. Of course, nothing is impossible. I don't know what the law says, though. Kentucky's not alone in moving their primary. Louisiana and Georgia both have moved theirs. Louisiana and Georgia were supposed to vote before Kentucky, and they have actually moved their primaries back to when Kentucky's would have been, so like kind of mid-May. We just talked about Ohio just a second ago, but they kind of like got it agreed to Monday night at around 10:30 after significant drama, including a judge who told them they couldn't move it, and then an appeal at the last second, and basically the Secretary of State and the governor saying, we're going to move it. The Supreme Court then allowed them to move it, and they haven't actually decided on a day, but it most likely will be June 2nd. So that Ohio situation was a big mess.
I think June is maybe like the safest.
Yeah.
But, like, even the ones that move theirs till May, you know, they may still be in a similar situation in mid-May.
Yeah, we'll see. We will absolutely see. One major thing that I think is worth discussing is that this disease, COVID-19, it's going to make campaigning look a lot different. You know, I don't know. I think maybe, like, more people dropping literature outside people's doors. You know, of course, when you're walking neighborhoods, you're shaking hands, which that's not allowed anymore. Like, that's very, you know. Some of the candidates who are running in this race are older. They're older than 60, which puts them at huge risk, and they may opt to stay in and may give other people an advantage. Some of these older candidates may have to get creative. They may have to do some non-traditional campaigning, and I don't really know what that looks like. Maybe like online town halls or something. I'm kind of interested to see what people come up with as in ways to campaign in this crazy situation. And, you know, we have no idea what the world's going to look like on June 23rd. This crisis has gotten worse and worse as the days have gone by. And, you know, the lack of tests in the United States makes it very, very difficult to gauge how bad this crisis truly is. It, you know, maybe I've got it. There's no way to know.
There truly isn't.
Yeah. And that's just a really scary situation. One last piece about the primary election is that election volunteers, this is a major issue. A lot of the times the people that are running the elections in the United States are older Americans, and those people are at huge risk. You know, if you know anything about this disease, it hits people who are over 60, like there's a 1% mortality rate. And once you hit 80, there's like a 20% mortality rate. That's crazy. So, you know, if you are younger and feel up to it, one thing you might want to look into, and I don't really know how to do this yet, we may talk about it on a future show, is to become a polling place volunteer. You know, if there's younger people who are at less of a risk of, you know, getting this disease and then having it be very serious, you may want to be one of the people who actually runs the polling place. So that's something to look into. The primary election, I wanted to talk about it, but like there's honestly, we've moved it and I don't know what that means. One thing that is a little bit more clear, though, is COVID's impact or lack of impact on the legislature. And Jasmine, you're going to talk about that.
Yeah, so we talked about what our segments, you know, would be a few days ago. And so I thought that by the time we were doing this, maybe the legislature would not be in session. But that is not the case.
Right. Yeah.
So they took a long weekend, and then Andy Beshear announced that the legislature would still meet on Tuesday. When the legislature went into session, I think that maybe we all had the understanding that they were going to get a budget passed and then possibly any like emergency coronavirus legislation and then call it quits.
Yeah. And I think it was pretty clear that that was the governor's goal.
Yeah. So his comments before they went back in session, he said, I mean, what we have to have in this session is a budget. It's the only thing we have to have in this session. Now, there are big other needs out there. I understand that. But getting the budget passed is absolutely critical because we don't know how long we'll be dealing with coronavirus. So this was, I think, Sunday or Monday night that he said this. And, you know, around the same time, steps were also taken to limit the number of people in the Capitol. So the annex has been closed to the general public, and basically only legislators, staff, credentialed media, and then like maybe some people testifying on a bill are allowed to attend. So this is a really big deal, and it means that bills can be heard in committees and on the floor with, you know, without any protest or input from the public. That's a weird place to be when we have the legislature meeting, but no one else is allowed in,
right,
basically.
Right.
So the legislature did go back into session, and here's the recap of what's happened so far. And this really isn't everything. This is just some stuff that's happened.
Right.
So I wanted to note that Representatives Chris Harris, Buddy Wheatley, Lisa Wilner, and Attica Scott practiced social distancing, and they set up in the gallery that's like in the balcony. So good for them.
Right.
83 of 100 House members were present on Tuesday when they came back into session, and 32 of the 38 Senate members were present. And, you know, the Democrats issued a statement, and they urged Republicans to only work on the budget and coronavirus measures. And then Republican Jim Gooch said that that would be like a captain abandoning the ship.
Yeah. So basically, they did not take up the they didn't take up the governor's advice. They decided to stay working as opposed to pass a budget, pass coronavirus legislation, and get out of there. They are like, no, we're just going to plow ahead as if nothing is going on, right?
Yeah. And actually, Senate President Stivers had a fever on Monday, and he was able to get tested and tested negative. So he came in Tuesday morning, which still seems like a bad idea to me.
Yeah.
Because I know there's like a lag in symptoms for it. So anyways, he went in. That's like all I have to say. But and then David Osborne said that he and President Stivers asked the governor to call a special session to pass a budget, but that Governor Beshear wouldn't budge and wouldn't agree to that. So I don't know if, like, the Republican leadership is like, well, fine, if he's not going to call a special session, we're going to hear whatever we want to hear. Like, I don't know if it's, like, a response to the governor or, you know, if it's just, like, business as usual to them. I don't really know.
The governor spoke about this slightly in one of his press conferences, and he said that basically the Republicans asked to go immediately into special session so that they could consider whatever they wanted to for however long they wanted to discuss it. And he said, no, I want you to adjourn, and then I will call you back into special session to pass a budget and coronavirus legislation. And they said, no, we want it to be more broad than that. So, yeah.
That's different.
Yeah, and Governor Beshear was very much like trying to stay above the fray. And he was like, I don't want to get involved in a political discussion. And it seemed like this discussion was just very political. And, you know,
yeah,
that's just basically where we're at.
So here's what has been heard over the last 2 days. I think the first big news to come out of all of this when we found out that the legislature was still meeting was that it scheduled Senate Bill 1, which is the family separation bill, the anti-sanctuary cities bill, to be heard in the House. Right. And there was like pretty big backlash. from, you know, the media and on Twitter, and then later they removed it from the agenda. So that's really good news, but was super, like, gross to see that they'd scheduled, like, this anti-immigration bill to be heard, like, while we're in a global pandemic.
Yeah, and also in a time when nobody can, like, express their feelings about the bill in terms of protest. I mean, I know a lot of people who were very opposed to this and had organized responses to it. You know, people who would have been there protesting if this had occurred, and now they're not able to go there, and they're putting their lives at risk if they actually go to protest. So it seems like a completely inappropriate time to talk about any of this.
Yeah, and so another one of the Senate priority bills, the General Assembly also approved a free conference committee to talk about revisions to the photo ID law, Senate Bill 2. Yeah. So a free conference committee kind of gives them leeway to do what they want.
Anything. They could do anything they want. You could create any bill. And, of course, it does have to be approved by both houses afterwards, but it's, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and like, just a quick note, like, to show what's going on, like, just today on the schedule, 10 committees were scheduled to hear 34 bills. So this is definitely, like, we're hearing whatever we want you all to hear.
Yeah.
Talking about things that, you know, have passed and have made it out of committees, these are kind of in random order of how they happened. But the House passed House Bill 415, which would allow Kentuckians to get direct alcohol shipments. So while this isn't, you know, a crucial bill that we need right now or anything, I do welcome this, and it seems like a good time to be able to get direct alcohol shipment.
This may be one you could actually spin to say it's in response to the coronavirus, so, you know.
Yeah. Man, I've been waiting for, like, to be able to have, like, a wine of the month club for years.
Yeah.
Kentucky's been behind on this.
But again, like, there is organized people who are opposed to this. And I mean, it's mostly industry groups and everything. But this is, again, another example of a bill that people are on both sides of, that basically there's no way to express your opinion about it safely. So it's
Senate Bill 11 made it out of a House committee. And this is an anti-renters bill. I talked about this bill during a bad bill segment that we did, and this is an anti-renters bill that essentially creates, like, a new criminal offense for tenant property damage.
Right.
It's really bad, and also really frustrating that this bill was heard and passed out of committee at a time where people are, like, struggling to pay their rent. And the House committee also passed a Marcy's Law implementation bill. So if that passes the full House, I'm sure that I will devote additional time to that.
Yeah.
New school accountability bill. We talked about that a few weeks ago. This bill would change accountability standards for how schools are assessed. You know, we just moved to the STAR system last year, and this would change that system again.
Yeah.
And that bill passed the House Education Committee. Right. The House also passed a judicial budget. One thing of note in their judicial budget is that the Chief Justice would be given, like, more authority over running the courts during times of emergency. So that, I think, is in response to what's going on right now. And they also approved a transportation budget and a 6-year road plan.
Right, which is big. Yeah, that was something that would have needed to have passed anyway. Yeah.
Yes. And so, talking about the Senate a little bit, the Senate passed HB 284 and 327. These are criminal legal reform bills. HB 284, this is one that would reward people on probation who complete programs. It would give them credits toward their sentence on probation. And then House Bill 327 would automatically expunge acquittals and dismissals. I talked about these bills a few weeks ago when I was on with Cassie Chambers Armstrong. These are really good bills, and even though I'm not incredibly pleased that the General Assembly is, you know, hearing whatever they want right now, I'm glad that these are two of the bills that have made their way through. So that's some good news. And then right now, the Senate Appropriations and Revenue Committee has been meeting to take up its version of the budget. And so I may not even be up to date on all of this, because I think it's been going on, like, as I was getting my notes ready and we were setting up to record. But the Senate budget would get rid of the sweeps that were in Bashir's proposed budget that you talked about a few weeks ago. It would also withhold $500 million from the teachers' retirement system if structural changes to pensions aren't made.
Cool.
So I think this is really huge, and teachers can't show up in Frankfurt right now to protest it.
Right.
So that's great.
Right.
It also does, it gives funding to Teach for America, which the House budget did not. Uh-huh. And it didn't make the teacher raises that Bashir promised possible, but it does give a 1% raise to classified staff members mm-hmm. in public education. The budget would also add money to poison control, but I saw this tweet from Morgan McGarvey. The budget would only give them an additional $250,000 per year, and McGarvey said that it's costing $500,000 per month to operate right now.
Wow.
So that's a lot.
Yeah.
It also contains provisions that U of L would have to pay back $20 million of the $35 million loan that it's getting to acquire Jewish. And it does add 50 social workers and give them a small raise as opposed to Bashir's proposed additional 350 social workers. So 50-something, but not nearly close to what Bashir had anticipated in his proposed budget. So those are kind of the differences from the House budget that I saw up until this moment, but I don't know what all's happened since then.
Yeah, and I mean, if we're going to go through a regular budget process, like Senate A&R has to take this up, you know, you're talking about basically the Senate budget that the Senate A&R is talking about. There may be changes in discussion that's going on right now. There will be floor amendments at the Senate. It will then go back to the House. There will probably be amendments there, or probably what will happen is it will go to a conference committee, as it usually does. And that's normal process, but it just seems nuts that we're actually doing a normal process instead of just passing a continuation budget and adjourning. But if that's the way we're going, this is a nice way to think about the floor of the Senate budget. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's also really hard to anticipate what the budget should look like because revenue projections that they're operating from are going to drastically change.
Yeah. No, the whole economy is going to be different. Like, this is insane. Yeah. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, so it's really tricky, and you kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier, but I wanted to note, you know, Bashir has brought up the legislature in his past two press conferences. Yesterday, on March 17th, Bashir said, "We're done with politics," and mm-hmm. said that the General Assembly needed to pass a budget and go home, or that he'd adjourn them and call a special session. Of course, they've continued to meet, and he reiterated the same sentiment tonight in his presser just a couple hours ago and said the exact same thing that he said yesterday. But here we are,
yeah.
Still meeting, still hearing whatever the Republicans decide we should hear. Yeah, that's kind of the impact on the legislature, not much of one.
Yeah, it's nuts. The governor doesn't, I don't think the governor has the authority to adjourn the legislature. I think they only have the ability to adjourn themselves.
Yeah.
But they could adjourn at any time, and, you know, we could then bring this back up. And I think that Governor Bashir seems like the type of person who would, you know, hew to his word on that sort of thing. But I guess the legislature doesn't trust him for whatever reason, or they just don't think that this is as big a deal as it is and are just plowing forward. So I'll do some quick hits, but then we'll talk about what we're going to do in the future. So our quick hits are mostly about our federal delegation in the Senate. So Mitch McConnell, our senator, adjourned the Senate over the weekend. There was a House bill that had been passed about the coronavirus already, and the Senate did not work on that after Mitch McConnell adjourned them. And he did that in order to attend Justin Walker, the judge who was approved by the Senate. He had a swearing-in ceremony in Louisville. Brett Kavanaugh went with him. So that's why The Senate did not work over the weekend. And then the second thing is that once the Senate actually got back into session a couple of days ago, the coronavirus response was further delayed when our other senator, Rand Paul, forced a vote on an amendment basically trying to put some more roadblocks in front of people or put some more means testing in front of responses from the federal government. So, you know, the state government's
very
obviously...
cool senators that we have.
Yeah, absolutely. So without Kentucky senators, we would already have a response bill that had been passed. We do not have one as of right now. We probably will soon. But yeah, the federal government's response to this is something that's desperately, desperately needed, and we do not have much of one right now. So that is mostly our senator's fault. So there's that. So, Jasmine, you know, obviously we don't have a guest today. We actually were going to have one who is an expert in infectious disease. She's been called to other duties, which makes sense. But, you know, we do have other people on the schedule. I don't know what we're going to do. We're going to figure it out, though. Obviously, the coronavirus situation is ever evolving, and we will bring you what you need to know about Kentucky government's response to it. I guess the legislature is just going to keep going. So we'll talk about that as well. And then, you know, the people will vote at some point in the future. And if people are voting, there's going to be candidates running, and we will talk to them if we can at all. So I think that's what we're going to do. And yeah, that is my old Kentucky podcast for now. Anything you want to add?
I think that's about it.
Okay. Well, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @myoldkypod. They can like our Facebook page and listen to our podcast on the podcast app of your choice. We also have a newsletter that will still come out on Friday mornings. You can subscribe to it at forwardky.com/email. And we have a Patreon page where you can support what we do for as little as $1 a month. You can do that at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast. And last but not least, we are part of the Demcast Network.
All right, everybody, stay safe, wash your hands, stay home, and we will see you next week.